Welcome to International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, immigration, the economy, health care. The big election issue for U.S. voters seems to be candidate popularity.
The damage that ISIS has been sustaining is cumulative, and they're having a hard time replenishing their forces.
Iraqi forces are inside Mosul as Islamic State resistance fades. Also ahead, financial markets stumble on election jitters. One World Series drought will end, another will continue. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are assailing each other as unfit for the U.S. presidency in the final days of their campaigns before next Tuesday's national election. Trump claimed Wednesday Clinton's election would create an unprecedented and protracted constitutional crisis as he made a campaign stop in Florida, a state in the southeastern part of the country that he concedes he can't lose and still capture the White House. The blunt-spoken real estate mogul said Clinton would be under investigation as president for her handling of national security material on her emails during her four-year tenure as U.S. Secretary of State. With months of attack rhetoric almost over, many voters are likely to make their decision based on how they feel about the personal attributes of the two major candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on how the character issues are dominating this year's election campaign.
In the final days of the campaign, White House hopefuls Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are focused primarily on each other's flaws.
I love this stuff.
The renewed FBI probe into Clinton's use of a private email server while Secretary of State has pushed the issue of her trustworthiness front and center, and Trump wasted little time in seizing on it.
This is the biggest political scandal since Watergate, and it's everybody's deepest hope that justice, at last, will be beautifully delivered.
Clinton may be on the defensive, but she's also lashing out at what she believes are Trump's character flaws in the final days of the campaign.
Donald Trump is out there stoking fear. Disgracing our democracy and insulting one group of Americans after another.
Hillary is the one who broke the law over and over and over again.
Presidential campaigns often center on issues like the economy, foreign policy, and immigration. But this year is clearly different, says expert Matt Dalek.
This race has primarily become about character and about personality. I think this issue of character is going to remain front and center. I don't think it's going away. And I think to an unusual degree, issues and policies are not really as central as they typically are.
Polls show many voters question whether Clinton is trustworthy, but an even greater number fear that Trump lacks the temperament to be president. The perceived flaws of the two candidates have dominated the campaign, says West Virginia University analyst Patrick Hickey.
I think that this is a very odd American presidential election in that both candidates are viewed unfavorably by the majority of the American people. You know, usually that might happen to one candidate, but not both.
The questions about character have been center stage throughout the campaign. Trump went after Clinton over the email issue in the second presidential debate.
If I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation.
In the third debate, it was Clinton who went on the offensive over Trump's controversial comments about women. You know,
Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
With all the attacks on character, the election outcome likely will depend on which supporters are more motivated to vote, says Patrick Hickey.
And this is definitely a kind of anti-election as opposed to a pro-election, which I think means on election day, turnout is really going to be what matters, which side can turn out voters to actually get to the polls.
One of the longest and most divisive U.S. election campaigns will come to a close next Tuesday. And for many voters, the end can't come soon enough. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And we invite you to stay with VOA right up through election night. We are going to have wall-to-wall coverage. As the returns come in, we'll be here live for hours on end till we hear from both candidates and their speeches, regardless of how it turns out. So be sure to stick with VOA on election day. Right now, it's time for us to check out what's buzzing online. And to do that, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here in the studio with me with today's trending stories. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. It's time to stick with me for a little bit. Let's start with a story that should come with the disclaimer, don't try this at home, kids. Two Australian guys stuck into North Korea, also known as the Hermit Kingdom, to play golf. Morgan Ruig and Evan Shea sent an email to the North Korean government to request to play in their international golf tournament. And when Pyongyang assumed they are professional golfers, they just played along complete with fake national team blazers.
Wow, what a ruse. So are they safe?
I'm pleasantly surprised to find out that they are safe and sound back in Australia. In fact, they actually came in second to the last at the international tournament. So I kind of want to learn who the last group was. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Australian media went crazy over this story, and the two guys said they will try to do the same for an upcoming tournament in Somalia.
You might figure Somalia would be ready for that. What else happens to be trending?
This is great news for Disney fans. Specifically, those who enjoy Beauty and the Beast. The animation's live-action rendition is set to be released on March 17th of next year, and on Wednesday, Entertainment Weekly shared the first full image of Emma Watson and Dan Stevenson as the main cast for the movie. Within 5 hours, more than 10,000 people liked it. Yep. Watson is also trending because she has been hiding books in the London Underground.
Wow, well, that's interesting. What's all that about?
So it's part of her effort to promote a reading club called Our Shared Shelf. And Watson is not just an actress, but a feminist icon, acting as the global ambassador for UN Women. She hid 100 copies of Maya Angelou's Mom and Me and Mom at tube stations around London and even tweeted a selfie about it. And people who found the book shared images of their finds and tagged Watson. Jim, back to you.
What a great story. Thanks for that wrap-up, G. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE, especially if you find a book, you can tweet the photo. Our individual accounts that you may follow at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Myanmar's Rakhine violence flares as army moves in. Report says that no one was at the controls when MH370 crashed. Asian stocks fall as Trump rises in polls. Australian leaders berate Donald Trump as election nears. China gets tough on box office cheats. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. 2 weeks after launching an assault on Mosul, Iraqi forces are inside the city, the main bastion of the Islamic State in that country. Tuesday, special forces captured the city's state-run television station. One local Iraqi commander said the battle to liberate the city has effectively begun. The Iraqi troops and police are bolstered by Kurdish Peshmerga fighters and Shiite militia, capturing towns nearby and approaching the city from different directions to cut off any Islamic State escape routes. Abdul Qadir Sino, an associate professor in political science and Middle Eastern studies at the Indiana University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that he's surprised at the speed in which the Iraqi forces have reached the city limits.
That's because, of course, the damage that ISIS has been sustaining is cumulative, and they're having a hard time replenishing their forces. And so there have been steady acceleration of the gains for the Iraqis. Now it's estimated that ISIS has just a couple of thousand fighters at most in Mosul, which is much less than the number of fighters it could muster in its heyday in Iraq.
Of course, the Iraqi forces are made up of Iraqi police and soldiers. They're also Kurdish Peshmerga, but Shia militia in this Sunni-dominated conflict, are they going to pose a problem?
They will pose a problem because there is no political solution to what's happening in northern Iraq yet. We already have a humanitarian disaster take place right now in Mosul and other areas, caused in part by ISIS itself and in part by its opponents. And there's no political solution to address that humanitarian disaster and what will happen later in this region. The grievances that led to the creation of ISIS still exist. And if ISIS is destroyed now, but there is no solution, another alternative to ISIS will emerge in the future. And those Shiite militias play a role in aggravating those grievances.
Mosul is one of the biggest cities in Iraq. How long do you think it will take for this operation to complete? A U.S. coalition spokesman said on Tuesday that this conflict to free Mosul could take months.
It may be shorter than that, but it will not be easy. The number of fighters ISIS has in Mosul is limited, and the population is not necessarily completely supportive of ISIS. On the other hand, they have just been cut off from Syria, and they are isolated, and so it is a fight to the death. And those are dedicated people, and they will fight to the death.
Abdul Qadir, there's a related story that's unfolding. Turkey's military has begun deploying tanks and other armored vehicles to the town of Salopi near the Iraqi border. What are they doing there?
That's all part of anticipating the end game, what happens after ISIS is defeated. You have different factions, all with different interests. The Shia militia you just mentioned will probably want to enter Syria at that point to also become players, additional players in Syria in support of the Assad regime. The Turks are concerned with the Kurds, who also are gaining immense amount of territory in northern Iraq and basically are pretty much linked to Kurds in Syria right now. And so that does not bode well for the Turks, who consider the Kurds to be enemies. And so they are setting themselves up to be players. And they have made clear their intention to become players in northern Iraq and in Syria.
Turkey's defense minister said his country is responding to what he called important developments in the region. He said Turkey is making preparations for all kinds of possibilities. Turkey is opposed to Kurdish involvement in the fighting in both Syria and Iraq and has carried out airstrikes against Kurdish targets. Ankara is also concerned about the potential for fighting between Shiite militia and ethnic Turkmen who have historic and cultural ties with Turkey. Markets are sliding ahead of next week's election, even as the U.S. Central Bank chose to leave interest rates unchanged this month. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York with the latest.
Well, the expectation for rates to remain unchanged was certainly there. Now, traders are pushing that out by about 70% to December's meeting. Even though rates were unchanged as widely expected, you want to take a look at what they said in the communique. Essentially, the wording was the case for the rate hike increases, which is essentially the same thing as they said as the last report. There were only two dissents in favor of a hike. That's down from three from the last meeting. I found that interesting. But what the Fed is essentially saying is they want further evidence and data to support an interest rate hike, which is a way of saying they didn't want to do anything to throw another wrench into the markets prior to the election. But I think we could really expect something on December 14th, when it's the final meeting of 2016, to get that interest rate hike. I don't expect markets to act as volatile as they did last December if you just isolate the interest rate hike in itself, because the Fed has been incredibly clear telegraphing their decision to hike rates in December.
We have 6 days remaining before the elections when we find ourselves with a new president of the United States. Investors certainly watching what is going on.
Regardless of the outcome, several analysts do not expect a major election-related long-term market disruption for several reasons. Most notably, the stock market historically has performed well around elections as policy uncertainty is resolved. Now, you might ask, how can you even know what policy they're talking about? Campaign rhetoric is mainly just that. It's rhetoric. Priorities for the candidates do not necessarily match the amount of time they spend discussing various issues on the campaign trail. We have a system of checks and balances in the U.S. For example, Donald Trump will not immediately slap tariffs on imported goods and start a trade war, whereas Hillary Clinton, she will not break up big banks, even though she could do it unilaterally if she was able to do that. At the end of the day, corporate America is very adaptable. Over the past 80 years, many disruptive policies have come and gone. We've had recessions, periods of high inflation, interest rate spikes, Federal Reserve rate hike cycles, wars, terrorist attacks, etc. Through it all, S&P 500 companies have grown profits by an average of 8% annually, which is quite a good return. So I think we'll get more of a Brexit-style reaction. Well, you will have the immediate near-term volatility, and the markets will continue to go along with business as usual.
Our vote for great financial information, as always, is from Jill Malandrino in New York. Jill, thank you.
Thank you.
And we will check in again with Jill on Election Eve to find out what investors are looking at in the very last moments leading up to the U.S. presidential election and how it affects markets around the world, because, quite frankly, everybody is watching it. You can follow the latest until then with Jill on Twitter at Jill Malandrino. Also, check out our website, voanews.com, for more. And be sure to follow us on our Twitter account at @VOA_IE and Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
On November 8th, American voters will choose their next president. We'll provide you with the latest updates. Will it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Will third-party candidates like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein have an impact on the final outcome? What does that mean for Americans and the world? It's all here on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. Two events converge today. It's the weekly release day for our VOA Game Room podcast, and it happens to be a very special Game 7 in Major League Baseball's World Series. So, here's part of what you'll hear when you download today's VOA Game Room podcast.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game, sung by Edward Meeker, Edison Record.
When two Major League Baseball teams that haven't won a World Series in a combined 176 years collide, you know it's going to be an epic battle for one to come out on top. So it has been with the 2016 Fall Classic, going the distance to a decisive seventh game between the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs. After splitting the first two games of the Best of Seven Championship Series, Cleveland won two, then Chicago won two. With everything on the line in one last game, Cleveland manager Terry Francona is happy to be playing it at home.
Being home, there's some obvious ones is, you know, when you're on the road, one, it's you kind of you against the world, which is okay. But the biggest thing of all is when you're the home team, you hit last. So you get to use your bullpen differently. And that's a huge advantage. And that's why so many good teams have better records at home. I think every hitter's probably going to be more comfortable in their home batter's box because they do it half the year as opposed to going to a city once or twice a year. So there's some other advantages, but just the fact that you hit last is very big.
Even though this is the biggest of all possible games and the Indians can win a World Series for the first time in 68 years, pitcher Josh Tomlin says it's still just baseball.
I know the atmosphere of this game is not the same, but it's still the same game. Between the lines, it's still 60 foot 6 inches. It's still 90 feet to first base. It's still baseball in the grand scheme of things. It's still the baseball game whenever the umpire says play ball. So that's how you have to treat it. We have a chance of winning a World Series, but you still can't have that mindset of trying to go out there and win the game in the first inning. You have to go out there and take each pitch as it is and start living that moment, see what happens.
On the other side is Chicago Cubs manager Joe Maddon.
Yeah, I've never been looking forward to wanting to play the seventh game of a World Series in my life, you know. From an entertainment perspective, if you're a baseball fan or looking to become a baseball fan, it was wonderful tonight, outstanding. But I like to believe we're going to gain some momentum from this game. Momentum is always based on your starting pitcher, too. And well, again, with these guys, you saw how good their bullpen was once again. It's really important to grab that lead and hold on to. We did.
To win it all, Chicago has to complete a three-game comeback. Infielder Chris Bryant says,
why not us? I mean, that's kind of our, you know, I feel like we play our best with our backs up against the wall. So, you know, we went out there today, took care of business. You know, you never know what can happen in a game seven. So, you know, but we're all about writing our own history. You know, this team is a special one. And, you know, we look at so many times throughout the year where, you know, we haven't been playing good, but I feel like, you know, we turn that around. Someone told me today that, you know, 17 times this year we lost a game and we went on to win three in a row. So why can't we do that now?
Cubs infielder Addison Russell says this team has been on a mission to break the 108-year championship drought.
We're making history. Why not stop? This is entertaining to us. It's fun, and we live for this. So we see a lot of challenges ahead of us, and we embrace them. You know, that's what we've been talking about since spring training, I think, since 2015. So that's kind of like the mindset we've had, and we definitely have embraced that.
The results and reactions on next week's edition of the VOA Game Room. And so much more on the VOA Game Room podcast, Beyond Baseball. Check it out. And if you have a way to do it, check out Game 7 of the World Series. Truly an historic game coming up very soon. You've been listening to International Edition. You'll find us at voanews.com, on Facebook and Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, Carl Starling, our engineer. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced a new project that will assist Vietnam's transition to climate-smart and low-emission development through improved forest protection, enhanced biodiversity conservation, and increased resilience of communities. USAID's Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator for Asia, Gloria Steele, announced last month the USAID Green Annamites Project during a meeting with leaders of the People's Committee of Quang Nam Province. This project, which runs from 2016 until 2020, will invest approximately $24 million in Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces. Forests play a critical role in Vietnam by protecting watersheds, preventing soil erosion, mitigating climate change, and providing for resilient communities. They are also home to rare and endemic species only found in these areas. Unfortunately, Vietnam's forests and the people and species that depend on them are under increased pressure from unsustainable development. The USAID Green Annamites Project, working in tandem with provincial authorities, will engage smallholder farmers and their families to improve livelihoods and increase investment in climate-smart agriculture while conserving the natural biodiversity of Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces. Climate change is a priority issue that directly threatens achieving Vietnam's sustainable development goals. To accelerate Vietnam's transition to low-emission development, USAID supports Vietnam's response to climate change through adaptation, sustainable landscapes, and clean energy programs. Climate change work is an important part of our strategy in Vietnam, said Ms. Steele. This project is designed to improve people's incomes by promoting investment in climate-smart agriculture, while at the same time conserving Vietnam's natural forests and biodiversity. Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces are demonstrating how sustainable development can contribute to Vietnam's efforts to achieve low emission and resilient economic growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.